Good jobs report coming out from the Labor Department on Friday. Not too hot, not too cold, just about right. 157,000 new jobs created in the month of July. 170,000 new jobs created in the month of July in the private sector. And nice upward revisions for the months of May and June. So overall, a good jobs report, and certainly glad to see that. We want as many people working as possible that seek jobs. And of course, as we have discussed on Money Talk, we have more jobs in the country right now open than we have people to fill them in terms of qualifications. Yes, we have millions of individuals that seek work, but the number of people seeking work is not matching up well with the number of openings in terms of qualifications. And for that reason, we have more job openings than we have qualified applicants. Part of that, of course, has to do with the overall unemployment rate, which is extremely low at 3.9%. You know, there was a time when the Federal Reserve would define full employment as something in the range of 4.5%. Well, they have to rethink that now because we have an unemployment rate of 3.9%. And certainly that is lower than the long-standing definition of full employment in terms of Federal Reserve monetary theory. So all of this is going on, and while all of this goes on, while this unemployment rate continues to decline, we see the education component change. And right now, if you do not have a high school diploma, in other words, if you're a high school dropout, you're in a category where the unemployment rate is down to 5.1%. Why is that? Warm bodies. Warm bodies is the answer. Sometimes warm bodies will suffice for commodity-level jobs. And you don't have to bring a lot of qualifications to the table. 5.1% for those without a high school diploma. It's one of the lowest numbers I've seen. Those with a high school diploma, 4.0, just about matching up with the 3.9 national unemployment rate. And bachelor's or higher, very, very low, 2.2% unemployment, once again, underscoring the value of higher education, whether it's a college degree, whether it's a trade school, whatever, the value of getting additional education beyond high school is right there in that number. It's in two numbers. It's in the unemployment level of 2.2 for bachelor's or higher, but it's in another number, too. It's in another number also, is what I'm saying. And that number is $1 million. $1 million is the average additional income that an individual earns when they have a college degree. $1 million over their earning lifetime. That's a big number. And certainly does indicate that it's to the benefit of the individual to bring something to the table when seeking work. The unemployment rate among adult men, that's all adult men, 3.4%, and adult women, 3.7%. Again, national unemployment rate, 3.9%. Now, when we take a look at these jobs numbers, we focus in on the non-farm payrolls because the government workers, that's not coming out of the private sector, right? That's coming as a result of government policy. And by the way, that's not just federal. That includes government workers in all 50 states. So there's a lot that goes into that number. So we had a total of 170,000 new jobs in the private sector. And we lost 13 government jobs, 13,000. Most of this was state government job loss. And that brought the top, the net number to 157,000. And then we had a nice revisions upward for the months of May and June, because they do revise these numbers at an ongoing basis. So the jobs numbers are good. Over the past 3 months, the average is 224,000 new jobs per month. And that's how we have seen the unemployment rate get back down to 3.9%. But one of the numbers that gets a lot of attention is average hourly earnings growth year over year. And the reason that number gets a lot of attention is because it is easy to compare that number to the year-over-year increase in the consumer price index. And when you use these two critical numbers, you see the reason that wages have declined in real terms, in inflation-adjusted terms, wages have declined on a year-over-year basis. So we have the number from Friday's report from the Labor Department that average hourly earnings year-over-year rose 2.7%. But we also have the number from the Consumer Price Index that prices went up 2.9%. So 2.9 in price increases, 2.7 in wage increases, comes out to a net loss of 0.2% in wages on a year-over-year basis. And again, that's using average hourly earnings. So those are the numbers. We are not seeing increased real wages. We are seeing increased nominal wages before inflation of 2.7. When we factor in the inflation of 2.9, we see it's actually a negative number on a year-over-year basis. Now, obviously, another factor very important is the average work week. And the average work week declined 0.1 hour in this report to 34.5 hours. It had been at 34.6 hours. It had been upwardly revised. Now it's back down to 34.5 hours. And each 0.1 hour in the average work week certainly does reflect on total wages and the totality of the labor report. So that was an item that was certainly notable in the report. By the way, average hourly earnings for the month of July gained 0.3%, and that brought the year-over-year number to 2.7%. We also look at aggregate weekly payrolls, because this is a really important number. It includes payrolls, hours, and earnings. That was up 0.1% for the month of July. And year over year, the change is plus 5.0%, which keeps it within its long-term range. And again, these are aggregate numbers. Payrolls, hours, and earnings, everything thrown in to give you a total number. And this number is important because it shows support for personal income, and that provides the dry powder for, or the ammunition, if you will, for consumer spending growth from employment and from wages. So all of that matters for that reason. All in all, a good labor report. And this has contributed to the fact that we've continued to see this moderate growth in the U.S. economy that we have been seeing now for many years. We have seen growth of 2.25% year over year in real gross domestic product for several years now. The current number, 2.8%, that's inflation adjusted or real gross domestic product growth year over year for the year ending June 30th, based on the numbers we have in hand right now. The year over year real GDP growth, 2.8%. Which keeps it in the moderate category, which has helped us to avoid so far the bottlenecks, the shortages that can occur when the economy overheats. Let's get out to Naperville, Illinois. Mitchell, welcome to Money Talk.
Thank you for taking my phone call. Hello?
Yeah. Mitchell, welcome to Money Talk.
Okay, yeah, thank you for taking my phone call. My question is about a money market question, and it is I have a Charles Schwab account, and I have SNSXX, that is the prime money market account, in my traditional IRA and my individual IRA account, and I have the SWVXX, the government. No, wait a minute. That's the That's the that's the prime money market. The other two are the prime money market account. Got that reversed. SNSXX is a treasury in my individual and my traditional account, whereas the prime money market is in my Roth IRA account. Do you see a problem with that?
I would say that my focus would be on money market yields right now. In other words, I want to see money market yields that reflect for me, the investor, or you in this case, the investor, money market yields that make sense, that tell me that the provider is not taking an excessive amount of the interest on the money market and keeping it for their own profit. And that's the reason I like the Vanguard Prime Money Market that I've talked about on Money Talk. Vanguard Prime Money Market is a money market fund that generates an excellent yield relative to what's out in the market today. It's over 2%. So that's what I would focus on. I would focus on the yield that you are getting in the various money market funds that you have. And if you can find that those yields are over 2%, which means they're competitive with Vanguard Prime Money Market, then I think you should feel good about that. If you find that the yields on those funds are wanting, are less than over 2% right now, then that's something to take a look at, because that may mean that your provider is charging expense ratios on the money market funds that are taking money out of your pocket and putting it into their pocket, which, of course, you don't want as the fund owner. So that's what I would be focusing on and looking at, Mitchell, when you are evaluating those funds. I don't think it's so much, well, I have this fund, I have that fund. I think it's really, what is the yield that you are earning on that fund? And you can go to their website, by the way, and you can look up their yields on a daily basis. Very easy to do. Go to their website and put in the fund symbols that you were talking about, and you should find it reasonably easy to locate the current yield on those funds. And what I'm comparing it to is what's out there today in a money market fund that's easy to own, such as Vanguard Prime Money Market, where you're getting a yield right now in excess of a 2% annual rate. And there's one more thing about that yield. All the money market fund yields should reflect the rising trend in short-term interest rates that we are seeing as a result of Federal Reserve monetary policy. I mean, the Federal Reserve has very clearly stated that they are going to continue to increase short-term interest rates as part of their dual-track policy that we've talked about on Money Talk, increasing interest rates on the one hand and reducing the size of the Federal Reserve balance sheet on the other hand, which means basically putting securities that have been sitting for years on the Federal Reserve balance sheet, putting those back into the open market. And for now, they've been doing it on a redemption basis. As the securities have come due, as their maturity dates have occurred, they have, instead of rolling the money over as they did for years, they're now allowing the open market to take possession of those securities through the bidding process, thereby increasing the supply of Treasury and agency issues that they are making available in the open market. So when I speak about the money market yield, I'm talking about what's available on short-term treasury bills, what's available on commercial paper, what's available in the short-term instruments that normally go into a money fund, whether it be a government-only money market fund or whether it be a general money market fund, which also can put instruments such as commercial paper and other instruments like that. Appreciate the call.